A report from earlier this year by the personal finance website WalletHub rated Wisconsin as the third best state for dental health in a study that looked at 25 key indicators of dental wellness, including access and dental treatment costs. But there's also the issue of affordability and dental anxiety. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest this hour is the president of the Wisconsin Dental Association and a dentist with the Black River Falls Community Dental. Dr. Rachel Steele joins us, and if you have a question for her about your dental hygiene, dental health, your next trip to the dentist's office, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can always send us an email to talk@wpr.org as well. And Dr. Steele, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
For starters, what are some of the reasons that I found that study pretty interesting about Wisconsin ranking third for our dental care, dental wellness in the nation? I think that sounds great. But what are some of the obstacles that you find to people getting into the dentist's office?
Well, I think part of some of the issue is a few years ago we had, it was lovingly called the silver tsunami. So baby boomers, the baby boomer generation, was starting to retire. And back in that era, the class sizes for dental schools were much larger. They averaged about 150 students a class during that time. And then in the late 80s, early 90s, kind of into the 2000s, several dental schools closed. A lot of them decreased the class size. So when I graduated in 2004, my class size was only 75. Yeah. It has increased. I attended Marquette. They have increased it back up to 100. But just that in general kind of decreased the amount of dentists graduating, couldn't keep up with the amount of dentists retiring. So that era was kind of a little bit of influx. But now it's starting to, the tides are turning, and there are more dental schools that are opening. The class sizes are getting a little bit bigger. So hopefully within the next, you know, few years, more and more dentists coming in will help to bridge that gap. It's harder in the rural areas. Just because not everybody is cut out for rural living. it sounds funny, but it really truly is. Not everybody is used to, I mean, I grew up in Norwalk, Wisconsin, which is a very small town, mm-hmm. and I moved back basically to the same area. So I knew exactly what I was getting into. But if you've had somebody who's lived in an urban setting their entire life and then move to the rural areas, it is quite an adjustment, because unless you're a huge outdoors person, you know, there's not a huge nightlife like there is in a bigger city. And there's just not as much to do here unless you're, you know, really involved in the community. So it sometimes is harder for that transition for some people. So, you know, it's just a matter of finding the right fit for the rural areas. And then there's always this perceived notion that, oh, we can't make as much money living in rural areas, which really, truly isn't a factor in that kind of a setting. So it's just a matter of, you know, kind of getting through to the younger generation that this is a really good opportunity in the more rural areas.
You're a graduate of Marquette University School of Dentistry. Are there other dentist schools in the state of Wisconsin, doctor?
No. Marquette is the one and only.
Wow.
And Marquette does have the policy that 50, so with the 100 students, half have to be from the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the structure is set up there. So at least 50 students every year from Marquette are in the state. Whether or not they stay when they graduate isn't always to be seen. A lot of them sometimes do specialties that take them out of state, and sometimes they just don't come back after graduating because other opportunities come up. Some take the military route and do time in the military to help cover costs of tuition and that. So sometimes not every graduate from Wisconsin stays in Wisconsin, but a high percentage do.
But I think my dentist graduated from Tufts University in Boston and relocated here. But it sounds like you're saying that accessibility to dental care may depend on where you are in Wisconsin, and some of the rural areas may be underserved, like in many cases of health care across the state and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, too, what happens is some of the singular dental offices that it's only one provider, when they get to the age of retirement, if they can't find somebody to take over their practice, a lot of times they unfortunately have to, their patients have to go to another dentist, and that practice closes. So then that just puts more of a strain on the area because they're short now a dentist. Some of the larger private equity dentist offices like Aspen or Forward, they can help a little bit, but even they struggle with retaining dentists sometimes and keeping them. And they're not really into the rural communities like they are. They're still more so positioned in the bigger cities.
Dr. Steele, why did you become a dentist?
Funny. Originally, I wanted to be an orthodontist. I was lucky enough to have braces when I was younger, back when I was in school. It's not as common as it is now for kids to, you know, have ortho and get the teeth straightened and stuff. So that's originally what I thought. And then I went to dental school and realized that that's not what I wanted to do. I liked the other parts of dentistry, the general dentistry parts of it, the fillings, the crown and, you know, doing crowns, doing extractions, that kind of thing. I just liked the whole as far as that goes instead of just one portion of it. And I'm not nearly anal retentive enough to be an orthodontist. No, you have to be really, really detail oriented to do ortho. That's why, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we always recommend a board certified orthodontist to do orthodontic care, especially when it comes to more complicated cases, just because it's so, I mean, it's amazing what they can do.
Do we find a lack of orthodontists in rural areas of Wisconsin as well, in your opinion?
To some extent, however, in our area, we're actually fairly lucky. Dr. Christo, who is based out of Eau Claire, has been very good as far as he has a lot of satellite clinics that he utilizes, and our office is actually one of his satellite clinics. They've been coming here for almost 15 years. It's only once a month, but it helps the patients in the area not have to travel to Eau Claire because it's about 40 minutes from here. So for them to be able to come down here and utilize part of our building in order to see patients. But yeah, the further north you get, the further, you know, up farther, you know, the orthodontist, any specialist gets to be a little bit further and further in between. It's harder and harder for to get a specialist to go further north as well.
I had braces for a good part of my adolescence, and it never occurred to me to go into dentistry, but I've always appreciated the way I've been treated, and I think part of that is because of the expectation of anxiety of patients as they go in. How do you deal with some of the dental hesitancy, I guess you'd say, for people who find anxiety from having to go to the dentist?
Well, the best way to deal with anxiety is to be upfront about it. Oh. I've had patients, like early on in my career, I had a patient come in and we were going to do a root canal. And in order to do a root canal, you have to put on what they call a rubber dam. It's a sterile field to help keep bacteria out when you're doing a rubber dam. Well, I had placed it on her tooth and then she started to panic. So I took it off and then she proceeds to tell me she has claustrophobia. I'm like, You need to tell me these things. If she'd have told me that ahead of time, we could have talked about it. We could have gone through different options. We could have done other things. I think it's just communication is the biggest factor when dealing with anxiety, whether it be, you know, they had a traumatic experience when they were younger that they can actually pinpoint when it happened, or just they've never really had one exact, you know, instance, but it's just this is not their favorite place to be. And then we can work through things with them, do less than what we had originally planned. I typically tell patients, you know, you're kind of, if we're doing more than one filling, I'm like, well, we'll do one. And then you're kind of in the driver's seat. If you think you want to keep going, we'll continue. If you think, nope, I'm done for the day, we can, you know, back off. I think if they have a little bit of control in the situation, it helps a lot with anxiety, as far as instead of just the expectation you're going to sit here and I'm going to do this and you're just going to have to deal with it. And I think in years past, especially with younger students, younger kids in years past, that's typically where I hear this beginning of the anxiety, a bad experience when they were little, you know. And nowadays, now the training for dealing with children and then in the pediatric world is so much different than it was even when I was in school. Like the things that they can do, and like the dentists that specialize in pediatrics are beyond amazing. And I mean, we see kids in our office, you know, if we can, and then if it's just not going to work, then we refer them on. But yeah, to work with kids all day, every day is just, I can't imagine.
But for grown-ups, you struck upon something that I guess probably goes to other anxieties when you mention control, like people who have anxiety when they fly. It's about, to some degree, relinquishing control. And then to provide that avenue for some control in the process, it makes a lot of sense in helping to alleviate some of that anxiety. So I understand that completely. And yes, the dentist's office when I was a kid back in the day is far different than the dentist's office I see for children today. And that looks like fun. And even as a grown up, I'm like, let's go into that room. It's a lot to look at on the ceiling.
Yeah. So yeah. All sorts, even in because I've been here 22 years, and even from when I first started till now, how I deal with anxiety and that has changed, you know, quite a bit, just learning more about it and, you know, being more familiar with the different options and what we can do for patients. So
Dr. Rachel Steele, our guest, she practices at Black River Falls Community Dental and was sworn in as president of the 3,000-member Wisconsin Dental Association and will serve until November of this year at least. And she's taking your calls today at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Jeff in Pelican Lake. Jeff, hi.
Hey, good morning. First, congratulations to the president of the Wisconsin Dental Association. It's your turn in the barrel. I'm 78 years old, and for 7 years I worked in a prosthodontist office in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on Wisconsin Avenue across from the Pfister Hotel. And so we had a lot of interesting cases walk through that door. In 79, I had my own lab, and I had that till 2015, and I retired and moved up north. And so my dental background is I got pretty close to a dentist degree working in that office, and also seeing what my creations, my restorations looked in the mouth, and how happy people were when they walked out with a full set of teeth or a bridge or whatever, a single crown. When I moved up north, it's really sad up here. People are not educated as far as what dentistry can do to them, do for them. I mean, like save their teeth. And the common thing that I come across is that, oh, yeah, I pulled my tooth out yesterday. And I said, why did you pull your tooth out? Well, it hurt, so I pulled it out. And the guys up here, that's what they do. They pull their teeth out. And, you know, it's like the old expression, when you go buy a horse, you open up its mouth and see how old it is. You know, and so up here, they judge your age by how many teeth you have left in your mouth. So when I show up with a full set of teeth and we're talking, and they'll say a comment to me, you kids don't understand what it's like. And I'll say, well, I bet you I'm older than you. And they say, well, how old are you? And then I tell them, and they're 50 years old and I'm 78, you know, and they don't have any teeth left. I'm going, so why don't you get dentures? And there's, you know, where can these people go? What's up available up north?
Thank you, Jeff. Dr. Steele?
As far as, you know, unfortunately, education, you know, I still have patients come in that are like, oh, my parents had soft teeth, I have soft teeth, or I don't want to spend the money on doing a root canal, just pull it all figure something else later to repair it and or replace it. And a lot of the times, if we just kind of sit down with a patient and talk to them about, you know, the pros and cons to both, because ultimately, you know, once they realize that, you know, you can have the tooth out, but to replace the tooth versus trying to save the tooth is always going to cost more than trying to keep your natural tooth. And then a lot of times, too, when you go through, okay, so you really don't want to do the root canal, what are you going to do after we take the tooth out? And kind of go through the options with them as well. Like, you know, you can't, this option isn't going to work for you, or this option isn't going to work for you. And then it gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And then they can kind of rethink the attitude of just pull it because it hurts. Mm. There are times when there's no option but to take it out. You know, massive bone loss around the tooth that's extremely broken down where there's not really anything left of it to even try to restore it. In some instances, they fracture it. I've had patients where they've just broken the tooth right in half, so there's not really any way to fix it. At those times, yes, definitely, you have to have the tooth out. But I always tell patients, like, it's always, there's nothing that's going to replace your tooth as well as your tooth. You know, you can have bridges, you can have implants, but all of that is going to cost way more than trying to save what you have in there. Is it completely infallible? No. And unfortunately, anything in dentistry isn't 100%, you know, without its risks, and it's not 100% guaranteed for life. I think education, unfortunately, and I know the schools are trying to do more with education. But yeah, unfortunately, with the amount of offices out there and, you know, like I said, dentists not always going to the rural areas, it's kind of a catch-22 at this point in time.
Part of me thinks about how much we've learned about gum health and how we've found connections between our oral hygiene and things like our cardiovascular system. And, you know, the idea of pulling a tooth out now just leaves the gum exposed, and the gum is part of our oral hygiene, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And a lot of times, too, though, like I said, sometimes, so when a patient gets to the point where they have what they call periodontal disease, that's when bone and gum have been affected in the mouth, where you end up having bone loss, you have recession. It's different than gingivitis. Gingivitis is just some swelling of the gums, a little buildup. You come in for regular cleanings, and that can be pretty much taken care of. Bone and gum disease gets to be more intricate as far as how to treat it. And unfortunately, once that bone is gone, you pretty much aren't going to get it back. Mm. There are some instances where you can do some grafting in some areas in order to put like an implant in or attempt to save a tooth. But once the bone loss happens, you can't really, and if it's kind of generalized throughout the whole mouth, you're not going to get it back. We can stop it, or at least halt it, and try to minimize any more bone loss. But that, especially in a general dentist's office, we can only do so much in that area. And then it requires a specialist. It's called a periodontist. But in that instance as well, specialists, especially in the northern areas of the state, are very hard to find. I know in Eau Claire we have 3 periodontal specialists, but I know in Green Bay there's only one office in all of Green Bay. La Crosse only has one office. So yeah, they're out there, but patients, especially in the northern areas of the state or more rural areas, will have to travel farther to find these specialists.
But this is why dentists preach prevention, right? This is why you're always talking about the need to floss, or why don't you pick up an electric toothbrush, or a water pick might do good for you, because once that bone loss is gone, you're not going to get it back, and it's going to be more intensive care. So the best you can do is prevent it in the first place, and those things are pretty basic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and yes. And no. Yes and no. I mean, you would think that more patients would, you know, feel that, oh, if I just brush my teeth and I go in, you know, twice a year like they tell me to, you recommend and floss and that. But I think there's a lot of, a misnomer, but I think a lot of people think that if they don't have dental insurance, that they can't afford to come in to a dental office to get, you know, just the basics of stuff done.
Affordability becomes an issue here.
Yes, yes. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, if I had dental insurance, I'd be able to afford all this. But dental insurance itself is kind of a weird – dental insurance is different than medical insurance. And sometimes people don't understand the differences. You know, a lot of them think it is run like medical insurance, that, like, once they make a deductible, most of their stuff is covered. Whereas in dentistry, you only have a set limit of benefits a year.
Yeah.
And not everything is covered at 100%. And, you know, not every office takes every insurance. And it gets to be kind of a weird just hassle, even in our office, you know. And then they come in and expect, unfortunately, our office to know exactly what's going on with their insurance, which is virtually impossible because there's so many different dental insurances out there. You know, obviously the biggest one most people know is Delta, but there are other office, there are other types of insurance, there are other insurance carriers, and even within one insurance carrier, there are different policies. So in order for us to, especially most dental offices, to know exactly 100% what your insurance is going to cover and what it isn't going to cover is just, it's crazy. But we tell patients, we have patients that when they get to the age of retirement and they're going to lose the insurance that they've had, they ask, like, what would be the best insurance to get? What do I look for? And we have to tell them, like, you have to look at how much it's going to cost you a month versus how much traditionally you've used that insurance over the last few years. Because if it's going to cost you, say, I'm just throwing it out here because I have no idea, $100 a month for a plan, and you only you yourself only have to come in twice a year to do, you know, regular cleaning and one exam once a year and some images, it's going to, in the long term, it's going to be cheaper for you to just to pay out of pocket than it is to pay $100 every month.
Sure.
For the little bit of coverage that you have. So we really try to tell patients, like, you really need to look into it before, you know, signing on with anything. Not necessarily saying you shouldn't have insurance, but you really need to step back. Because there are time limits with insurance that you have to have it for so long before it covers certain things. So we really try to educate our aging population that are retiring, that are out there kind of looking. And we always tell them, like, if you do have a question, you know, you can call here. We can try to help you as much as you can. But that's the thing that kind of is the misunderstanding, that you have to have dental insurance in order to be able to afford dental treatment.
Jeff and
Pelican
Lake.
In the long term,
yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
But in the long term, putting off the dental treatment until it's always more expensive to try to put out a fire than try to just keep you on a preventative.
Yes.
Kind of regimen here.
And Jeff in Pelican Lake, thanks for the call. He also wanted to ask whether or not there was any mobile program for free dentistry being offered in lower income communities. He says he remembers there used to be one and wonders if it still exists.
There is, and I don't know off the top of my head, but it does seem that there is one, and I would have to get back to you on that. There is a mobile dental clinic, but I can't remember. I honestly can't remember who funded it and who came up with it, so I don't want to misspeak.
Sure. I've got about a minute here, but Colleen from New Holstein emailed to ask why tooth care and eye care require separate insurances. It's all part of our body, so why are teeth and eyes not covered by general health insurance? That's probably not for you to answer, Dr. Steele, but I'll ask anyway. What's your take on that?
Well, and, you know, it's funny because that's been a question that we've all ourselves asked in the dental realm. We don't understand why vision and dental has always been separate when it's all part of the body. So I don't know if it's just because the schooling is different, and so they just automatically assume that, you know, dentistry and medical and vision are all not connected because we all go to different schools.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure. But, yeah, it's been a question we've all wondered in our
Colleen, I hope that makes you feel better. Dr. Steele has the same question you do. Dr. Rachel Steele, our guest this hour. We're taking a look at dental care across Wisconsin in rural areas. She's a general dentist with Black River Falls Community Dental. She is also the president of the Wisconsin Dental Association. And she's answering your questions, and we welcome you to share your stories today at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Marvin and Menominee, if you can hang on a couple minutes, we'll get right to you. You can also send us an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest this hour is the president of the Wisconsin Dental Association and a dentist with Black River Falls Community Dental, Dr. Rachel Steele, here to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or talk@WPR.org. And we'll get to some more emails in a minute, but first, let's get to Marvin in Menominee. Marvin, hi.
Hello, Lee, and hello, Dr. Steele. Thanks for taking my call. Very interesting conversation today. I wanted to first of all say I have excellent dental care now. I have great dentists here in Menominee that I see, and they've had to do a lot of work for me because as a child, I'm in my 70s, dental care has changed so much that as I relate back to a child, my dentist used to tell me, you don't need Novocaine because this drill squirts water and air out and cools your tooth. And he also, to give us something to do as we sat in the chair, he'd put a drop or two of mercury in our hand and let us see how mercury worked. And I think he used to do some weird experiments for somebody, I think. I don't know, but because of that type of experience, I didn't go to the dentist for many years, way into my, maybe, I'm going to say, 30s before I had any serious work done. And then most of it was to replace bad fillings and broken teeth or whatever from that kind of stuff. So this is why people have anxiety. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
No doubt, Marvin. That sounds like that's not just anxiety. That's trauma. I mean, no Novocaine on a root canal and then here play with some heavy metals while we drill into your mouth without any pain relief.
I often wonder how that affected my thinking.
You sound fine to me now, Marvin. And thank you for the call, Dr. Steele. I mean, I guess we don't even have to say it, but we certainly have come a long way in dental care. We've learned an awful lot about what it means to treat and as well as pain relief.
Yeah, unfortunately, that story is more common than you would think. I have a lot of patients kind of in that same age range that, you know, when they're younger, you know, that tell the same kind of tale. So that's where I'm saying, like, the anxiety stems from stuff like that. It's not so much, like you said, how we deal with kids nowadays. Like, kids come out, grown up to be adults that it's fine to go to the dentist. It doesn't bother me. I know what to expect. It doesn't hurt, which is a great change from those. See, my mother is kind of in that same, you know, era of like white knuckling it in the chair, even with me working on her because of past things that when she was younger. So thankfully that has changed for the better. And we see less and less of that in, you know, the 20 and 30 year olds. Their dental anxiety is not as great as it, you know, in past years.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing the story, Marvin. That is traumatic. Even listening to it was traumatic. I did not have dental insurance and did not see a dentist very often in my 20s. And when I got back to it, I needed to have some work done. And I had a really gentle dentist who took care of me. But I also was offered nitrous oxide as a way to alleviate anxiety. That might not be common practice today, but at the time I felt like it really did help, even with just the Novocaine needle. Is that something mm-hmm. that is used today?
Yes, it still is. That's probably one of the, I don't want to say easiest, but...
I'll say it. That made it the easiest for me.
Just in general in a dental office, that's probably like the easiest way to help with anxiety. The thing with the nitrous oxide is we control the amount that the patient gets. Everybody is different how they respond to the nitrous. So it's a percentage of oxygen mm-hmm. and the nitrous gas mixed together. So the patient, you know, we help have them, you know, we ask them several times how they're feeling in that kind of thing. And I've actually had patients that, you know, just recently said, this kind of always nerves me up. And my assistant would be like, well, have you ever had the gas? And they're like, no. And they're like, well, you know, it doesn't help with the numbing. It's not going to make you more numb, but it will help take the edge off the like little bit of an anxiety you're going through. And we use it on them and they're like, well, that was great. I should have had this years ago. And, you know, so it is it used as frequently as it used to be? No, but it still is there, and we have it in our office, and I think majority of dental clinics still, to some extent, have the nitrous gas. It's a useful tool. Like I said, a lot of times, you know, thankfully more and more people don't need the gas,
right.
But it's still there, and like I said, it's a nice... Because the other nice thing with the nitrous gas is it leaves your system just as quickly as it enters. So it doesn't have any long-term effects, whereas like some people who take anti-anxiety meds before they come in, mm-hmm. that's unfortunately something that lasts all day long and they have to kind of, you know, change their, you know, schedule to accommodate taking something like that before they came in, which still helps people. But this way it's something that isn't going to linger in their system and it just kind of usually by the time because after we use it, we turn off the nitrous and just have them breathe oxygen. And by the time they walk out the door, they're pretty much back to normal, so to speak.
Yeah, in my experience, the Novocaine lasted a lot longer than the nitrous.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have anxiety, even if it's about a Novocaine needle, you may want to inquire about the availability of nitrous oxide as a way to alleviate temporarily that anxiety, especially if you are thinking about taking anti-anxiety medication before coming into the dentist's office. They might be able to help you while you're in there, and you can leave on your own volition, you know, by yourself, for the most part. Is that right, Dr. Steele? I'm not getting that wrong, am I? Yeah, thank you for that.
No, yeah.
Let's go to Kira in Madison next. Kira, hi.
Hi. I'm calling about two things. Number one, I came in late during your conversation, but I'm very saddened by the loss of coverage for people, you know, in like Medicaid, and so many people have been thrown off of having any kind of access to help. And I know people have had access to dental care as well through different programs. But I'm calling about myself. And recently I had a fall, and it took the most of the blow on my two front teeth. Mm. And I did have it checked out. I have a split lip, and but I know that one of my front teeth is looser, and the one next to it is slightly looser. And the information that I got when I was cared for was, and not from a dentist, but ER person, they said just, you know, watch it for a week, and if the looseness and the pain, the nerve pain, doesn't go away, then connect with the dentist. So does that just get better on its own? So it's not a lot, but it's a little. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll get my answer off the air.
Okay, Dr. Steele.
Well, it can, but what we usually tell patients, I've had the same thing, a patient, a kid, an adult, get banged in the mouth, whether it be a fall, get hit with something, they come in, we do x-rays, nothing's broken, nothing really chipped off, but, you know, we take a look at it, everything's swollen, we tell them, you know, we can't right now, it's hard to determine because there's no obvious fracture or anything to the tooth, and they're not displaced, they're not out of, you know, they might be a little mobile, which is unfortunately kind of comes hand in hand with getting smacked like that. Sometimes they can wiggle a little bit. You have to wait a little bit for that swelling to go down just in general because everything's so irritated. But if it's more than a week or so, we do recommend seeing a dentist just to take an image of the area, especially since you only went to the ER. Even if it feels better in a week or two, anytime you sustain trauma to a tooth, that tooth or those areas can end up having nerve damage down the road. It can have it right away, a day, week, month, year, years later. I can, an example is myself. When I was in high school, I caught a softball to the face. I didn't break any teeth, nothing, no problems. And then 18 years later, my one front tooth, I bit into some corn on the cob and I'm like, oh, there it goes. And I knew it was, know exactly what happened and why it happened. So teeth, especially when they're traumatized, are unpredictable. They can be good for a while and then they can turn south. So we do really recommend you at least getting an appointment, you know, now that it's been a little while, especially if they're still a little loose, to double check with a dentist to see if there's anything that they can tell right away. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely at least try to get in just to have them and, you know, explain what happened, how you went to the ER, and then, you know, just double check. Because unfortunately, the ER is not going to take images to, and dentists and doctors don't really know, you know, like, as detailed as we do what happens in the mouth with trauma like that. So yes, definitely would check and follow up with a dentist.
Plus it's sweet corn season. You're going to want those front chompers.
Yeah.
18 years later. That's amazing, Dr. Steele. Let's go to Samantha in Whitehall next. Samantha, hello.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. This is Samantha. Anyway, I have Medicare, Medicaid. I get Anthem. That's the insurance I have. But I'm just wondering, why do a lot of dental places not pay for Medicare, Medicaid? Like, I get it because I have ADHD, but I know a lot of people that have different disabilities that get it through the state, different insurances, but they automatically get it through the state. But there's a lot of places like where I live in Trumbull County that won't take, except the one in Slum, that won't take your insurance. And there's probably other counties, too, where you got to go farther away to use your insurance. And I'm wondering why that is, that they won't take it. And, you know, for people, I can drive now, but for a long time I couldn't. And, you know, I didn't have my license. And for people that can't drive, how do they get to a dentist? Because one time I needed something emergency done, and the place in town here where I live said that you couldn't get it done without a, you know, prior authorization. I said, you want our teeth to, like, fall out before we get it done? I mean, I'm like, that's frustrating. So
yeah.
I just wonder what you can do about it, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Well,
frustrated and help others. So
completely understood, Samantha. And let's see what we can do. And I also have this email from Jim in Verona, who said he worked at a nursing home in the Madison area. And when residents there needed an oral surgeon and their primary payer was Medicaid, they'd have to travel to Milwaukee or La Crosse. There weren't any in the Madison area. So not only does this appear to be an issue in rural areas, but in urban areas as well, Dr. Steele, when it comes to Medicare or Medicaid coverage for dental care.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's kind of not even just the state. It's kind of across the country. And the biggest problem is the reimbursement rates. For a dentist to accept Medicaid, we're getting like a reimbursement rate of dollars versus so typically most typical insurances cover 50 to 80% of the fee for service on certain things, whereas Medicaid only covers about 30%. Mm. So for an example, if you have a cleaning that costs, you know, we charge, the dental office charges $90, we're only getting about $30. So that in and of itself is difficult to maintain a dental office when you're not able to cover the cost of your most basic things. And sometimes, too, unfortunately, when patients, you know, unfortunately, that's kind of the biggest thing. Also, just ability to see patients, especially in the rural areas, like just the amount of time that you have, and that a lot of rural dentists just cannot take on any more patients.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that kind of gets put to the back burner as well, because they just don't have the capacity to see more patients. They need another dentist. They need more hygienists. So unfortunately, that kind of takes the back seat. We in Black River have a clinic that is structured just to see Medicaid patients. But unfortunately, they have to come. I mean, there's a lot of patients that come from quite a ways away to see it. But it's an ongoing thing that we've been dealing with for quite a few years, trying to get a better reimbursement for our Medicaid services for those who do take it.
Dr. Rachel Steele, our guest dentist with Black River Falls Community Dental and the current president of the Wisconsin Dental Association. And this, you know, I know I brought up my dentist earlier, and I think you are in the same boat here, Dr. Steele, that a lot of dentists seem to volunteer some of their time for care where it's needed and that where they can put it, where they can find it. Can you talk a little bit about your volunteer work?
As far as myself, I don't volunteer too much. I do every other year those Wisconsin Dental Association, along with the foundation, the foundation puts on the Mission of Mercy, which is a 2-day dental event. It moves around the state, and we see patients for 2 days for free of charge. First come, first serve, and do as much as we can for the patients if they're willing to sit to hang around and get as much as they can get done. So, and it's anything from, I mean, people have had root canals, get cleanings, filling work, extractions. We may also see pediatric patients those days. We see, we make what they call flippers or little treatment partials for patients. So, like, say somebody comes in and they have to have their two front teeth taken out because there's not anything else we can do. We actually can make them a little removable prosthesis to wear. So when they leave there, they can still leave there with two teeth in the front, or people who have had teeth missing for a long time, you know, mainly in the front. We don't typically do back teeth, but, you know, so patients can see, you know, and not feel, you know, have a nice smile and not feel.
I see that a lot. It's interesting that a smile is a big part of identity. That is a way we communicate, and that if you don't feel like you have the ability to smile, you lose that opportunity to connect with somebody. That's bigger than I think anybody really thinks of until they become self-conscious about it, doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big thing that a lot of the dentists in the state take part of. Last year it was in Wausau, Wisconsin. Our next one will be sometime next year, and it will be actually in Madison. So we try to move it around the state. We don't always keep it in the same place in order for patients in those areas to be able to, you know, travel easier, you know, depending on the need. And it's all volunteer. It's all donated services from dentists across the state, from assistants, from hygienists, you know, even people of the public. We always welcome. We need patients. We need people to help. You know, it's a 2-day event. It's a huge event. We expect to see close to 2,000 people in those 2 days.
Wow.
So we've been doing this. This is the next time around in 2029 will be 20 years of doing it. So,
And there's a need for it, obviously, because we started the hour with ranking third in the United States, according to one account, it appears as though access in the United States across the board could be improved, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Let's continue with your calls and questions now for Dr. Rachel Steele. We'll go to Dave in Appleton next. Dave, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just want to discuss an insurance that's offered by my dental insurance, Dental Associates in Wisconsin. If I go to the dentist and they find a major problem, I can join up with their insurance that day, and that problem would be covered, and everything else for a year, I would save 20%, and it only costs $65. So check the insurances before you go to a dentist. You may find one that you don't need until there is a problem. You save 20%, and it's only $5 a year.
Kind of cutting out there, but I got the dental associates there. And I want to tie this in with Kevin and Nina, who emailed to say he had to switch dentists twice most recently this past year. Neither dentist would accept his dental insurance anymore, and one of them said they would not let someone else determine what they charge. By not adhering to coverage, the cost for dental care for Kevin's family of four would double. And it appears more offices, to him at least, are going this route and passing the cost on to the consumer. Kevin really liked his family's last dentist, but in this economy, families like his need to do what is most cost efficient. There seems to be a big player in our dental health care, and it's not the dentist and it's not the patient, Dr. Steele.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, it is becoming more and more common for dentists to stop being signed on providers for dental insurance. So there's a difference between accepting and I think there's a little bit of a misnomer. Most dentists, at least to some capacity, are providers for one or two dental insurances. That means that they have contracts with these dental insurances that they will use their fee schedules, and they agree with their fee schedules as far as reimbursement and that. We are only a sign-on provider for one, but we still file insurance for other insurance carriers that we are not sign-on providers are. The difference is the coverage. The patients who have the insurance that we take that we are sign-on provider for, they themselves have a little bit better coverage, but in the same aspect, it's more of a detriment on us because we actually have to take, we have to agree at a loss typically for being a signed-on provider. So it helps out the patient, but it doesn't necessarily help us out. So that's why a lot of dentists are going away from that because we have to, by becoming a contracted dentist, you have to agree to certain write-offs off the top of what you typically would charge, and then they will only pay for a portion of that back to the provider. So it's a kind of a catch-22 that dental insurances are making more and more rules and more hoops that we have to jump through in order to be these sign-on providers, and it's coming down to the fact that it's just not worth it as far as financially for the dentist to continue to do this because it's just eating such a huge part of our office that we're not able to sustain our offices by being providers for some of these. And not every office, you know, is like that and some make it work, but you know, there are offices out there that just it's just not worth it to still be in contract with certain or any.
If the dentist can't afford to do it and the families can't afford to do it, that explains, goes a long way in helping to explain why there could be issues to accessibility for dental care, not just in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. but beyond. William and McFarland emailed to ask, what are the most significant breakthroughs in dentistry expected over the next 20 years, Dr. Steele? William's been amazed at the progress in imagery over the past decade, and so what improvements do you see?
Well, even in my 20 years here, it's amazing what the students are learning now coming out of dental school versus what we were dealing with. You know, implants are becoming much more predictable and a really nice long-term solution. However, they're not a cheap solution, but they are a wonderful solution. Just the ability, the 3D imaging that we can take, you know, a lot of patients, we don't even have to take impressions, you know, that lovely stuff that we have to put in the mouth. We don't usually have to use that anymore for a lot of our procedures.
Good.
By having that, digital x-rays are becoming more and more relevant and more detailed, and the ability to see and not have to question as much, and just how quickly they can be done, and we know right away what's going on versus the processing in the past and how long it took. And even there are some offices that mill their own crowns can make the crowns in office, and that's been improving. I feel that there's room for that. That's going to be another big, huge uptick of dental offices being able to just, you come in and get your tooth ready for a crown, and you're able to leave with it the same day instead of having to come back weeks later.
Yeah.
There's still, I mean, there, even since I've been here, that's been something, but it's getting better and better and better. So I have a feeling that that's going to be something that changes. They're able to 3D print dentures now.
Oh, Dr. Steele, we're going to have to leave it there, but you've been a tremendous resource, and I think that story is not finished, so we'll have to do this again, whether you are still the president of the Wisconsin Dental Association or not. Love to have you back.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rachel Steele, current president of the Wisconsin Dental Association and a dentist with Black River Falls Community Dental. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.